dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. In that battle space, I'm sorry to say, one of the fronts that we must reckon with is our own internal security and that of our borders. And one of the people who has done heroic work in trying to understand and analyze and make thoughtful recommendations about all of this, in particular in the context of the troubles that we have with insecurity of our border and illegal immigration. And illegal immigration is our guest for this very special edition of Secure Freedom Radio, focusing on that issue with Mark Krikorian. He is the executive director of a marvelous organization in Washington, the Center for Immigration Studies, truly one of the country's preeminent authorities on matters involving illegal aliens, how they get here, what they do here, what we should be doing about them, and for that matter, those who are coming here in the future if we're not careful, if we don't adopt sensible policies and exercise real care about things like comprehensive immigration reform. All of that, the topic for this program for the full hour. Mark Krikorian, welcome back. It's great to have you with us.
Glad to be here.
Let's set the predicate, Mark. Let's just try in an unvarnished, objective way to assess where we stand at the moment in a number of key parameters, and then we'll get into what's happening legislatively and politically and otherwise. For starters, the border is more secure than ever is a refrain that we've had from the Obama administration. It sounds almost with the regularity and I think with the inaccuracy of the statement that you can keep your health care and your doctor if you want them under Obamacare. Where are we on the security of the border as objectively as you can describe it?
Well, there's no question that we've had real improvements at the border. I mean, we've spent a lot of money on that, partly because it's easy for politicians to focus on border matters as a way of talking about immigration control rather than all the other things, interior enforcement, visa controls, and the rest that end up bumping up against strong interest groups. So we haven't wasted all the money we put at the border. The Border Patrol is double the size it was a little more than a decade ago. We have more fencing than we used to have. The flip side, of course, though, is that the Border Patrol is still smaller than the New York Police Department. And it has to patrol not just 2,000 miles of Mexican border, but everything else. The Canadian border, Alaska's border with Canada, Puerto Rico has border patrol because there's all kinds of illegal aliens from the Dominican Republic trying to sneak across the Mona Passage. So, the fencing. We've talked about how we have more fencing. The politicians talk about this all the time. And there is more. I mean, I've been down to the border in most of the states down there. But the kind of fencing that we really need, you need double fencing, really. I mean, to have any kind of meaningful control, it's the way the Israelis do it in most places. And we have some of that, but we have about 30 miles of it, you know, on 2,000 miles of border. And we don't need to have it everywhere, but, you know, my point is that the improvements we've seen at the border have been hyped and oversold by politicians for political reasons. Essentially, the subtext being, look, you knuckle-dragging, bitter clingers, we've done what you wanted, we hate it, but we did it anyway, so now give us our amnesty. And the fact is, that's not, you know, they're overselling something that's not really what they're describing.
Let me ask you, Mark, we had a story just in the past day or two about radioactive material that went missing for a time in Mexico. Fortunately, it was discovered and apparently secured before anybody other than probably the folks who stole it were harmed by it. But it it was a bullet we dodged, because had that come across the border and been used in perhaps a dirty bomb or something like that, it would have been a horrific problem. How, given what you've just said about places where we have fences and, you know, border patrol increases and all the rest, how hard would it be for determined individuals to bring such toxic materials, or for that matter, other kinds of weapons, maybe of mass destruction, across the border today?
Not hard at all, frankly. I mean, it turns out these were nuclear materials from some kind of medical purpose, but very, very toxic, dangerous materials. And a couple of, you know, idiots stole the truck. It's that kind of thing. But, you know, the fact is that the cartels smuggle backpack loads of marijuana across the border. In fact, often illegal immigrants, that's kind of the way they pay their freight, is that they carry a backpack load of, yeah, exactly, mules. In other words, they're not professional mules. It's sort of like you do this, carry it across, and then that's, you know, that's your payment. Believe me, there's no, you know, you could load that up with some kind of, radioactive materials. The illegal immigrants might die from radiation poisoning. It's not like the smugglers care. They're scumbags. I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet. Now, it's probably harder to drive a truckload of that sort of thing through a regular border crossing point, because a lot of them have these radiation detectors, but not all of them. I mean, I just, earlier this year, was at a border crossing in Texas. I won't say where it is so that people don't get the wrong idea, but it's there's a ferry that four guys, Mexican guys, pull a rope on and pull cars across the river. It's a formal border crossing point, but I'm pretty sure there's no radiation detectors in this place. They only get, 30 or 40 people crossing, maybe 50, 100 people crossing in a day, one way or the other. You put a bunch of that in the trunk of a car, who's going to know?
Mark Krikorian is our guest. He is the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. He contributes very actively to the debate about immigration policy and the so-called reform efforts at National Review Online and in other publications. We're always delighted to have him with us here at Secure Freedom Radio. We've talked a bit about the border. Let's talk about some of the other pieces of it that you've indicated, Mark, are harder for politicians to address, but also bear very directly on the condition we find ourselves in vis-a-vis illegal immigration. Start with internal enforcement of our laws. What's happening with that?
Well, not much. There's a couple of key issues in the non-border related enforcement parts of immigration. One is you got to make sure that it's very hard for illegal immigrants to work, because if you can't work, you can't really function. And there are a lot of illegal aliens who work off the books. Sure, in front of the Home Depot, they get picked up for cash, that kind of thing. But that's a relatively small share. Most illegal immigrants work on the books, and because we have not mandated that when you hire somebody, you actually electronically have to verify the information they gave you. In other words, make sure they're not lying to you. That's a kind of relatively easy change that has been strongly resisted, both by the racial chauvinist groups and by the business groups. It's one of those things that it's so obvious and would lend such credibility to the government's efforts to control immigration if they did that first, that it's mystifying to me that they still haven't done it. But, I mean, that's a key issue and one of the important areas of discussion. Another one that's very important both to general immigration control but also to security specifically is this issue of visa tracking. Almost half the illegal population came in legally as a student, a business traveler, tourist, what have you, and then just never left. And we, to this day, don't know really whether you leave when your time is up. We have probably, 5 million illegal immigrants who came in and never left. We have hundreds of thousands, so there's probably something like 800,000 illegal immigrants who've been ordered deported, and nobody's looking for them. They didn't leave either. So this whole idea of tracking foreigners and making sure they comply with the terms of their admission is almost a precondition of having a sovereign state. And yet our politicians treat it with a kind of frivolity that's shocking.
They do indeed. Mark, we've got just 20 seconds to the break. You say 5 million illegal aliens in this country as a result of visa abuse. Out of a total population, is it 11 million? Do you think
11,
it's more?
Probably 12 at this point because it's bumped up.
But you think that's roughly right?
Yeah, that probably. It's not huge. Maybe 13, but it's not 20. I mean, we would know if it were that big.
Mark Krikorian is our guest. We're going to be back with him for three more segments, I'm very pleased to say, to address at greater length next what is going on in Washington with respect to this natty and potentially security-threatening problem that it is.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
On August 2nd, 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
Debbie Lee became a Gold Star mom that day.
And it started a lifelong mission of her own. In Mark's honor, Debbie founded America's Mighty Warriors.
Dedicated to supporting the troops and their families.
AMW educates the public through speaking engagements, rallies, and events to raise awareness and appreciation of our military.
AMW advocates for the troops.
Funding, rules of engagement, benefits. AMW is committed to being a voice for justice for our troops. AMW serves Gold Star families, retreats, concerts, special events.
Good things to remind the families they're not forgotten.
America's Mighty Warriors.
Nonprofit.
Dedicated to the troops and their families.
Donations are tax deductible.
Log on to americasmightywarriors.org.
Find out how you can help.
The best of America deserves our best. Log on today.
americasmightywarriors.org.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.americanfreedomlawcenter.org.
If you don't know where Bill Bennett stands, here are some of his beliefs.
I believe Americans should largely do much more for themselves than many Americans are doing.
But do I rule out government as something that might be able to assist in that? And that I do not.
I do think families, churches, and schools are better places for that to happen. People should do for themselves what they can. Government should do what people cannot do for themselves.
Get to know Bill Bennett, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by Mark Krikorian, the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. His most recent book is How Obama is Transforming America Through immigration. He is the author of numerous and very timely and always very informative analyses of the issues we're discussing today. You can find many of them at National Review Online. Mark, we've set the predicate a bit for the ground truth, as I say, the problem we're confronting. The United States Senate earlier this year, with much fanfare, passed by a substantial bipartisan majority what has been called comprehensive immigration reform, very much to the liking of the Obama administration, very much disliked by many of the rest of us. Before we get to what is happening at the moment with the House of Representatives and its response to this legislation, remind us what's in the bill that the Senate has promulgated and that the president is fairly insistent must be in whatever final piece of legislation comes out of the Congress if he's to sign it.
The comprehensive part of comprehensive immigration reform means that it's 1,000 pages long and has all kinds of different stuff in it. That's sort of what it is. In other words, instead of dealing with one issue, it's an omnibus big bill that's a crate full of everything you could imagine regarding immigration. It's got three basic parts. One is all the illegals get amnesty right away. There are different levels and stages and hoops and all that, but basically everybody who isn't a criminal, and frankly even some of those that sneak through, will get legalized.
This is the path to citizenship, as they say.
Citizenship, eventually, that's what they're talking about. That's number one, and frankly, is the most important for the administration and the Democrats. The second part is huge increases in future immigration of people who aren't here yet, doubling legal immigration, doubling the admission of guest workers. That's the part that's most important to the business lobbies, the corporate lobbies, that sort of thing.
Including in Republican circles, right?
A lot of Republicans are for that sort of thing. And then the third part, the sort of trade-off for all of that, as it were, is promises to enforce the law in the future.
Trust me on this. We will do this sooner, not later, but at some point. Our guest is Mark Krikorian. And drill down just on that point, if you would, please, Mark. What are the nature of the promises about law enforcement and border security and so on in the future?
Well, one of them is that supposedly at some point within 10 years from now, all employers will have to check when they hire somebody whether their name and social security number and date of birth are all real and all match.
10 years from now.
Yeah, within 10 years.
Is that because it couldn't be done faster, that the technology is not available to do that, well, today, for example?
No, we could do it tomorrow. I mean, now it would have to be phased in just because, it's the kind of thing companies are going to have to change their procedures for. But it's already widely used. Something like a third of all people hired now are being hired by companies using this system called E-Verify. So it's not, there's no reason why not just 2 years? It's kind of ridiculous, but that's within 10 years. And the 10-year thing is the enforcement has to be in place for the amnestied illegal immigrants to upgrade their status from what I call green card light to a full green card that would allow them to become citizens. So that's kind of supposedly the carrot to get the government to do it, except all the illegals already are going to be legalized. It's just a sort of an upgrade that it hinges on these enforcement benchmarks.
Does the cynic in you, as the cynic in me, suggests, Mark, that the reason it's so long is that by the time that date comes around, nobody will continue to think that that's important, that this is otherwise, just a classic kicking the can down the road scheme?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's quite consciously designed in order to get the amnesty part out of the way, which it would have
right away,
and then to give kind of political strategic depth to the anti-enforcement side so that they can keep trying to roll it back before the deadline comes. It gives them enough time, enough leeway, political leeway, to work to undo these enforcement things. And of course that's what it is. Everybody gets that. I think only, there may be some naive Republican senators who thought this was not a trick, but, that's their naivete seems to me a disqualification to be serving in government.
I have a bridge to sell them. That's right.
Exactly. Also, within that 10-year period, there's supposed to be a biometric exit tracking system. In other words, foreign visitors, there has to be some kind of fingerprint, face recognition, some kind of thing that determines when they leave so we know who hasn't left. Again, this is something we now have the technology for. We did a report on this. It's at our site at cis.org. the United States government is actually paying several foreign countries to install at their airports biometric exit tracking systems. And our same politicians are saying, well, you know, it's very difficult and we can't do it here. We're already paying people to do it in other countries.
And they're using it to track people exiting their countries to come to ours.
Yeah, well, there you go. There you go.
Okay.
And then the third thing is a requirement about more fencing, which, you know, I mean, I'm okay with fencing, but it seems to me the marginal value of the next dollar we spend on enforcement is greatest if it's in some kind of interior enforcement.
And my own feeling about this is that there are other ways to skin the cat in terms of fencing that we ought to be pursuing, at least on an interim basis, until in such time as we get that double fence properly constructed in as many places as it's needed. Mark Krikorian, again, is our guest. He is the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. He's mentioned his terrific website. It is an indispensable resource at cis.org. Mark, there was a very interesting development after the Senate adopted this comprehensive immigration reform bill. And again, comprehensive being the operative word, like the comprehensive health care reform measures that were adopted under Obamacare. If you liked Obamacare, you're going to love immigration reform. But Marco Rubio, Senator Rubio from Florida, was one of the architects of this, very prominent in promoting it and in getting it through the Senate, and made a very concerted effort for a time to see if he could sell it to conservatives who presumably he's hoping will support him for president in the 2016 election cycle. Didn't seem to work out so well for Marco. Where is he now on this issue, and where do you think he's likely to wind up in the future?
It's interesting. Senator Rubio has basically taken every position possible on immigration. When he ran, he was a strong enforcement guy. He said that, you know, comprehensive immigration reform is wrong and my opponent is pushing, you know, the usual. It's kind of what you expect from politicians, quite honestly. He took a real hit, a political hit, for pushing this. I mean, it's...
Because he betrayed his previous position, or just because it turned out to be such a bad bill?
Both. Both because he flip-flopped. And because he, frankly, was, you know, selling something that was unsaleable and wasn't even doing all that good a job of it. I don't think he really understood the issue, quite honestly.
Well, he certainly made a lot of representations about it that turned out not to be true.
Turned out, yeah, exactly. You know, it was, if you like your fence, you can keep it kind of stuff. Well, now what's happened is that now that it's been passed, the House of Representatives is supposed to deal with the issue. And what the House has said, House leadership has said, is that we're not going to deal with any comprehensive bill. We're going to deal with this in a targeted way, have separate bills on separate subjects. And what Marco Rubio has now said publicly is that that's the right way. The House shouldn't even take up my own bill that I championed for all of those months. So again, he's now taken a completely different position. It's almost like, you know, what day of the week is this? What's Marco Rubio's position on immigration?
We're going to come right after the break to the question, which is very much on all of our minds, which is whether the House of Representatives is going to take his advice or do some sort of workaround that amounts to conforming to the president's demands. Our guest is Mark Krikorian. And I guess just quickly, Mark, is he now so badly damaged in your estimation that he is unlikely to be able to compete effectively in the primaries, Marco Rubio, for the 2016 nomination because of this immigration stance?
I mean, anything's possible, but yeah, I'd have to say he's now damaged goods. I mean, anybody could come back, and he's really trying. But yeah, I think he's no longer really in the running to be president.
Interesting. We will be talking about where the conservative base is on immigration, among other issues, with Mark Krikorian right after this.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C. Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Vice President Joe Biden reportedly urged restraint during his meetings with Chinese leaders this week. It's a safe bet that, as predicted, his hosts interpreted this weak U.S. response as acquiescence to their latest and dangerous assertion of sovereignty in the East China Sea. The danger will grow if the practical effect of the vice president's diplomatic foray will be to embolden the Chinese to use their newly declared air defense zone to block critical American intelligence collection flights. It must be asked, did Mr. Biden also lowball the U.S. response to China's boasts of its readiness to kill millions of Americans with nuclear missile strikes on our country, to exercise control of outer space, and to put offensive missiles on the moon? We can't afford to greenlight such behavior. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We're talking with Mark Krikorian. He has kindly given us a full hour of his time as one of the country's preeminent experts on immigration issues and the security implications thereof. He is the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. I strongly commend to you his website, cis.org, and also his writings, both book-length versions of them, like How Obama is Transforming America Through Immigration, and his more current topical pieces at places like the National Review Online. And Mark, I think we very nicely set the predicate for kind of the meat of our conversation, which is what I want to get into now. Namely, where is the House of Representatives on all of this, vis-a-vis the Senate bill? On the one hand, are they likely to take Marco Rubio's advice not to have anything to do with it? Something that the Speaker has intimated on a number of occasions. Other leaders of the House have as well. Or are we likely to get that sort of a bait and switch, with that being the ultimate upshot of whatever machinations they go through in the days ahead, and if so, when?
There's a real possibility of a bait and switch, and the core political issue here is, or I don't even know if it's, yeah, I mean, it's the kind of parliamentary issue, is that the House leadership has said they will not take up a so-called comprehensive bill, an omnibus bill that has all of the various different aspects in one big package, you know, an Obamacare-style monstrosity. That's what the Senate bill is. Speaker Boehner has said quite categorically that they will not be taking up the Senate bill. They will not be negotiating with the Senate about that bill that they passed. The thing, though, is that what they've said is they want to take what they call a step-by-step approach or a piecemeal approach, where they pass legislation on, say, border enforcement, one bill just on that, and then another one on guest workers, that sort of thing. The fear is, and this really was part of the plan, I'm afraid, by the House leadership, was to pass several different pieces of legislation that together would amount to the Senate bill. But they would be able to say, look, this isn't comprehensive. We did this in a responsible step-by-step way. And that's sort of where it stands. Are they going to try to do that? Or will they just pass some freestanding bills, targeted bills, send them to the Senate and say, if you guys pass these, then that's great. But, you know, we're not sending you a package that's comparable to the amnesty package that you already passed.
Now, Mark Krikorian, talk a little bit about, you mentioned sort of the parliamentary question. The Speaker has said that he is going to conform to the so-called Hastert rule, which is that a majority of the majority has to support whatever it is that they're doing, meaning he has to get his caucus really behind him on this. He's not going to pass whatever legislation in the immigration space may come to the floor on the backs of primarily Democrats and a handful, relative handful of Republicans over the objections of the majority of his majority caucus. Just drill down, if you would, a little bit as to how this actually gets done one way or the other. The comprehensive bill that the Senate has adopted is out there. I guess they've not actually sent it to the House, as I understand it, but there's a concern that if conference is held between, let's say, one of these piecemeal pieces of legislation out of the House on border security or on some other aspect of the immigration reform, that you'd wind up basically having come out of conference something that looks a lot like the Senate bill. Are we protected against that eventuality as things stand now, or is that still in prospect?
That's less likely, I think, than it was before. I mean, to explain again what it was, is the fear is that the House would pass, let's say, a border security bill that Republicans would vote for and, you know, be unobjectionable to conservatives. Well, then if they went to negotiate with the Senate, because you have to do that, House and the Senate, they pass slightly different things, and they have to then end up negotiating the differences, coming up with the same thing, and then sending that to the president. The fear is that they would just, you know, they'd go to this conference meeting, and they just add the whole Senate bill into the House bill, and then basically present Republicans in the House with a fait accompli with all this pressure that they have to okay this.
Take it or leave it, and they will have to take it.
Probably. But that looks like is not going to be the case now, because the Speaker has said that there's not going to be any conference meeting with the Senate over its comprehensive bill. The problem is, if they pass several separate bills and send them all together to the Senate, then they have done, in effect, the same thing. It just looks a little different. And the danger is that window dressing will be enough to get enough Republicans who are already under immense pressure from corporate lobbyists to back what amounts to the Senate package, but in a step-by-step way.
Yeah. Now, Mark Krikorian, let me just cut to the chase here. Obviously, the critical determiner, I guess, the decider, as George W. Bush used to say, of what's going to happen on immigration reform in the House of Representatives is the Speaker, John Boehner. There was a very ominous development, I think, for those of us who are concerned about this comprehensive immigration reform or deform, that's the way I think of it, exercise, in a personnel appointment by the Speaker in the past 24 hours. Talk a little bit about that and what you make of it.
Well, he has hired, tried to keep it quiet, but it leaked out, a woman named Rebecca Talent to handle immigration directly from his office rather than through the Judiciary Committee, which is where these matters would otherwise be handled. And the problem is that Ms. Talent ran John McCain's immigration push, his amnesty push, back in 2006 and 7. She had written amnesty,
which was very much with of a piece with this sort of comprehensive immigration reform and all of the problems you've described.
Yeah, it was terrible. In fact, it was actually probably slightly less terrible than the current version of it. It keeps getting worse. But yeah, it's the same thing. And she more recently ran immigration policy for a think tank called the Bipartisan Policy Center, which has been aggressively pushing amnesty and increased immigration. So, you know, this really does seem to be a signal that Speaker Boehner really does intend to push, try to basically come up with some kind of subterfuge to push the equivalent of the Senate bill somehow or another through the House and get it onto the president's desk.
One of the aspects of the subterfuge that is being reported these days, Mark Krikorian, is that there may be an effort to move this agenda legislatively after the so-called filing deadlines for re-election on the part of members and for their challengers in the various states in which these folks will be running in the 2014 elections. The thought evidently being that somehow, you know, you can finesse public opposition by discouraging or keeping at least this agenda item from being something used against members who might be otherwise disposed to vote for it. How do you see that playing out? Can he pull that off? And if so, will it make a difference?
Yeah, it does seem kind of improbable, but what they're saying, and this is, I think, a kind of last straw attempt, is that let's hold off voting in the House on amnesty until the potential challengers to Republican members in the primaries can no longer run, because there's a deadline when you have to file your papers to be on the ballot. So that when those deadlines have passed, then, they're saying, we can just, we can have them vote for amnesty and they can get away with it because they won't have to pay for it politically, supposedly, on Election Day in November. I find it fanciful, quite honestly, but I think that's clearly what they think about doing. And so that would suggest, you know, maybe a late spring, early summer kind of deadline for bringing up immigration. I don't think it's going to happen, but this is their last ditch effort at trying to get it passed this Congress, in other words, which ends next year.
The present session of the Congress is going to come to an end here shortly, but the Congress itself will continue.
Right, which means that legislation that's passed is still alive until the end of next year.
Exactly right. And in part, this presumably, the signal being sent both by hiring Becky Talent and by making noises about scheduling this late spring timing, is intended to signal to some of these constituencies, including those that they think are going to be inclined to vote for them, Hispanics among them, to stick with the Republican majority. When we come back, we'll drill down with Mark Krikorian in our final segment of this very special program on immigration security about the thinking behind the Republican approach to immigration reform in the House at the moment, right after this.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around.
And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is Frank Gaffney. Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaev's kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At America'sMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families,
including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org.
Michael Medved says stupidity in our federal government is a bipartisan issue.
This administration and the leadership of Barack Obama
and the leadership of some folks in the Republican Party
are both so stupid and just so inane and brain dead. Can you see some kind of bright side here?
Stupid is, stupid does, sir.
The Michael Medved Show.
You want to help me with this?
Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're visiting with Mark Krikorian, the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, about the present thrash underway at the moment and likely to intensify in the next few months, it seems, on immigration issues, whether they will be reforming, as they say, comprehensively or otherwise, existing law so as to put the illegal population in this country, some estimates as high as 12 million, on a path to citizenship, also known as amnesty, whether we will secure the border at last or otherwise enforce what's left of our immigration laws. Mark Krikorian is our duty expert on these matters. We're delighted to have him with us. And thanks again, Mark, for giving us a full hour of your time to drill down on these in some depth. I wanted to turn in our last segment with you to the thought process that seems to be operating in John Boehner's mind and other Republican leaders in the House with respect to the advisability, however one does it, whenever one does it, of essentially legalizing X numbers of millions of currently unregistered and illegal Democratic voters.
And future ones by increasing immigration.
There you go. Absolutely.
There are two political forces that are pushing Republicans to considering these measures of amnesty and increased immigration. One is the fear of the Hispanic vote, that somehow they think that this is a way of remaining viable and competitive in getting percentage of the Hispanic vote. I think that's misguided because, frankly, Americans of Hispanic origin vote mostly on the same kind of basis as everybody else: jobs, the economy, you know, national security, that sort of thing, not a kind of racially specific, subject specific voters. But there's a lot of people who believe that, and you know, they've been spooked by it and panicked to some degree. The other thing that's pushing this, and this is more the increases in immigration rather than the amnesty, is corporate pressure for cheap labor, so the corporations don't have to deal with American workers because they can always just say, well, you know, shut up, we're not giving you any more money. If you complain, we're just going to bring in more of these outside workers to keep wages down.
And one of our colleagues, Rosemary Jenks of Numbers USA, has pointed out, among others, and I think you have as well at the Center for Immigration Studies, Mark Kukorian, that big losers in such an exercise are, of course, American workers, particularly lower paid American workers whose value in the marketplace is diminished by having this cheap labor imported in violation of the law and so on. Give me a sense of kind of how you see the demographics of this campaign for immigration reform. Is it fair to say that it's kind of a bipartisan establishment on the one hand versus pretty much the rest of us?
Yeah, absolutely. The whole immigration issue works that way anyway. It's one of the areas where there's the biggest gap between elite views and public views. I mean, there's even public opinion research on this. The old Chicago Council on Foreign Relations did survey research on this, and they found that even things like support for the United Nations or support for foreign aid didn't generate as big a gap in opinions between elites and the public as immigration does. And so there's just, I mean, this really is one of those things where, you know, the old joke about the stupid party and the evil party get together and they do something both stupid and evil, and that's called bipartisanship. Well, this is bipartisan.
This is no joke, comrade.
Exactly, exactly.
But the problem is, of course, that there seem to be a lot more of the rest of us who, as you say, are very, very jaded on this whole concept than there are these establishment types, and yet they seem to be poised to run the table if we're not careful.
Yeah, the money behind this is unbelievable. I mean, since 2007, when the last push was defeated, the pro-amnesty, pro-increased immigration side has spent $1.5 billion on lobbying for this. That's billion with a B. They've got institutions across the board, the Catholic Church, National Association of Evangelicals, big business, big labor, the whole thing. But like you said, the public just doesn't buy this stuff. And so, you know, there's only so much that money and institutional pressure can do if the public skepticism is deep enough and intense enough.
Presumably that will operate on Republicans, many of whom I'm told come from safe seats without appreciable Hispanic populations. So the question really comes down to, Mark Kukorian, I think, you know, does John Boehner abandon, as he has on occasion in the past, this Hastert rule and decide that he's just going to throw in his lot with a Democratic and small number of Republican-based majority to ram some of these bills or even a comprehensive endgame legislation through?
Well, they've said they won't. I mean, the leadership has said that they will honor the Hastert rule on immigration. So, you know, I mean, anything's possible. I mean, the perfidy of politicians, obviously, is endless.
But, not to be underestimated,
yeah,
that's
exactly
for sure.
But you know, it's not. I think the chances of that aren't great. I think what they're going to try to do is cook up a kind of amnesty by saying, look, they're not going to get citizenship. They're just going to get a work visa, and somehow try to get 50% plus one of the Republicans behind that, with the Chamber of Commerce and, you know, big business pressure pushing just enough.
Grover Norquist, lest we forget.
Yes, yeah. Grover Norquist is obviously one of the central figures in pushing amnesty and de facto open borders.
So-called conservatives. Mark, one of the ways in which that amnesty may be fashioned, I'm told, is in connection with a variation on what's been known as the DREAM Act, again in the Senate. I think Eric Cantor has got another name for it with his bill. But the leadership seems to be behind this idea of giving an amnesty to the kids who came here without having any say on it because their parents were coming. Talk, as you have in the past with me, about what the problems are with that approach as well. And if you would stitch into it, something I'm really troubled by, which is the growing determination of people who are supporting this whole agenda to use what's described as civil disobedience, but it's really violating the law left and right to try to bring law enforcement of the immigration laws and the like to a screeching halt.
Well, this DREAM Act, which in the House will probably be called the Kids Act, but there isn't an actual bill yet. The point of it is to amnesty illegal immigrants who are adults now, but who came before they turned 16. Now, the idea is actually, I think, kind of sound. I mean, amnesty is distasteful, but for kids who came here actually, I say younger than 16, you know, kids who came as infants and toddlers, they've grown up here their whole childhoods. There's a case to make for amnestying those kids. I mean, there just is. I think they're sympathetic. A lot of the public gets that. The problem is, number one, obviously the people pushing this are trying to expand the category of people who would get this amnesty as much as possible. Number two, though, it doesn't have any enforcement measures to make sure future kids aren't in this situation. That's the problem. That's what I fear, that Eric Cantor's Kids Act, the House version of the DREAM Act, will just not have any of that stuff in it, and so it'll be the same as the original DREAM Act, which is a flawed piece of legislation, which Congress has rejected several times, although the president then just implemented on his own administratively as one of the many illegal acts he's committed.
Let me conclude with that. We've only got 30 seconds or so left, Mark Krikorian, but do you fear that the president is simply going to, as he has, as you've said elsewhere, issue executive orders to implement what he has not gotten from Congress?
Yeah. I mean, he said he won't, he can't. The White House, as soon as he said that, said, well, you know, we want to keep our options open.
Yeah.
So if by the end of next year there isn't a big amnesty on his desk, I think you can expect in 2015 an accelerating process of amnestying particular groups of people and trying to rationalize it somehow.
Wow. For all of the wrong reasons, I'm fearful that you could well be right, and this kind of extra constitutional behavior will be brought to us by President Obama in connection with immigration reform. Mark Krikorian, I know you will be standing athwart it. Keep up the splendid work you do at the Center for Immigration Studies. Check it out at cis.org, folks. Mark, and come back to us again if you would very soon. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again next week. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.